everyone, welcome to Anatomy of an Agency with me, Katie Traxton. This podcast shares the experiences of people in the public eye who work in the business of sport and entertainment. Whether you're looking to work with talent or for your own representation, we hope to give you honest insight into how things work. The good, the bad, and everything else in between. In this episode, we speak to former Blue Peter presenter turned sports broadcaster, Brad Z. We caught up with him at Eurosport's rooftop studio for Paris 2024, and I asked him how he started his professional journey.
I'd say it starts, honest answer, with a belief and a dream, simple as that. So I am ultimately a failed skeleton bobsleigh athlete. That's my story.
So we also know you're brave.
Or stupid, or a combination of the above. But yeah, so I was at university. I went to Loughborough Uni, and within about the first two lectures, I realized I don't want to do economics for the rest of my life. So trained, went on a show called Gladiators, back when it was on Sky One.
That's the period where, yeah.
The doldrums, it's like Rocky Five.
I wasn't gonna say it, I had to cut the sentence off, yeah.
It's the one that no one talks about or remembers. But there, I met a guy called Greg Kirk, who's now my friend. He was a GB skeleton bobsleigh coach and said to me, you've got a profile physiologically that would do well in skeleton. And at that point in my life, I wanted something bigger than myself. Not that I consciously knew that, but I did. So then having met him, went on this 3-year journey of hoping to represent my country and eventually the 2014 Winter Olympics. Spoiler alert, didn't represent my country in the 2014 Winter Olympics. But off the back of that, when I realized it wasn't going to happen, I was already presenting at uni for their channel. And I thought, I'll chase one unicorn. It kind of bore ashes. I'm going to go again. And if you asked me when I was 10 what I wanted to do, I'd have said I want to be a Blue Peter presenter. It was really clear to me. And then life happens, reality happens, and you go, that'll never happen. And I thought, I'm going to go for this again. And it was 3 years of working for free, 3 years of living in a hostel, having to move out of that hostel because I couldn't afford it, moving into illegal accommodation with asylum seekers, having every morning microwave porridge for breakfast, canteen lunch at the BBC when I was interning, and then for dinner, microwave rice, tin sardines every day because it's all I could afford. Took the number 50 bus into interning in Media City. I'd go to the gym afterwards. I was still a member of a gym there, purely to use the shower, because the shower in my place was awful. And then I was doing anything and everything in my power to get experience behind the camera, in front of the camera. So being a mascot called Spike the Lion, the athletics mascot.
I remember Spike the Lion.
Who doesn't?
Big time.
Legend. Although I know you're lion. That was bad pun.
It's really great.
So it was a red line, and I'd wave at the crowd, and all I thought is if somebody sees me, it could happen. And I thought, I can't control, people say, right time, right place. Well, I don't know where, I don't know the place, and I don't know the time, but I can put myself in as many places as possible. So I was just doing as many things as I could to make it slightly plausible. And then, while I was running at the BBC, I went for a meeting, got called in for a meeting to meet these guys from what was called the NHU. I thought they meant NHS, but mispronounced it, and I didn't correct them. And they said, so we work in Bristol, and I thought, okay. I thought, is there a hospital in Bristol I should know about? And then they said, we understand you've got a skeleton bobsleigh background. I thought, well, I'm meant to be having an ACL operation. I thought, is it to do with this? I was so confused. And then they said, we'd like to screen test you for this new show called Wild. We want somebody with an extreme sports background. Screen tested for that, got that job. 10 weeks of live TV, kids TV, Saturday morning, 1 hour. My contribution was about 33 nanoseconds. And I frothed before each and every single one of them. I wanted to do it so well, so badly. And off the back of that, got offered to be a 37th Blue Peter presenter, and my life changed forever.
That's amazing. I really like always everywhere as the antidote to right time, right place.
Yeah, exactly that.
If you had had the opportunity to shortcut all of that, right? You had a mum or dad, teacher, mentor who'd said, oh, hey, you seem great, fantastic personality, I can get you an audition on Blue Peter.
Yeah.
Looking back,
yep.
Is that an opportunity you would have taken, or do you think you needed to go through what you went through?
So the short answer is, I'm at a net cost for what I went through. What it took out of me is less than what I gained from it. What I gained from it, I would say, are attributes and values. So it's perseverance, it's determination, it's learning to learn. Now, if we catalyze and shortcut that process, I don't know how I would have been, but I do know I wouldn't have had to go through all that arduous emotional turmoil and strife that took years off my life expectancy, bottom line. But the nature of our business means that if my dad was a Russian oligarch or my mum was a producer at the BBC, I'd have been straight in there. But I'm a boy from Wolverhampton and that wasn't going to happen. So you either moan about it, feel sorry for yourself, accept it's not going to happen, or go for it. And because I love sports, I've seen enough people do enough ridiculous things to think it probably won't be me, but it could be me. And the only way to find out is to start.
At the time that you had this dream and ambition and you're doing everything you can to try and turn it into a reality, did you even know what an agent was?
I had a perception of an agent. So I think, I can only speak on behalf of being British, we think we know what TV is. So when you try and get into TV, people say, are they watching now, who you know, is he? You know, just strange cliches like that. Or it'll be, it's a tough gig, that one. You know, not many people do it, do they? It's, what do you mean not many people do it, do they? As in, not many people are accountants as a percentage of the population. But we go, well, I do accountancy at uni, for example, and I probably do an accounting qualification. So I think I presumed an agent was the gatekeeper to success and to jobs. And without a powerful agent, which I did not have one that was powerful or an agent, I couldn't get to behind that door.
Once you were behind the door, mm-hmm. Did you get an agent?
So, funnily enough, slight full circle moment, worked at the 2012 London Olympics. By worked, I mean I worked for free, which by definition isn't work. I did that at the Paralympics as well. Off the back of that, had a decent enough showreel to send it to agents, and a lady called Lizzie Barrow Brown, who at the time was with ARG Talent, had a meeting with her, and she said, I'll put you on my books. Now, looking back, she told me what she was going to do. She was going to put me on her books. She didn't say, I'm going to work for you. Now, back then I was, you know, greener than this foliage here. I didn't know what that meant. But I was beyond grateful that basically I was seen, actually. That somebody said, this isn't ridiculous. You saying this to me, I work in this industry, and you saying, I want to do it, I believe you. So that was monumental. So that got me an agent, and it got me over the course of the next year, maybe, I don't know if it got me a job, actually, but it did add to my belief, and that, I think, was also priceless.
And there is something to be said going into certain rooms for just being able to say, I've got an agent, for somebody else on your behalf who represents you sending those emails out. But what was the relationship like between you and the agent? What conversations were you having? How were they helping you? Other than the validation piece that you mentioned, how were they helping you learn to navigate this industry better, more impactfully, more effectively?
I think it's a really tough answer, because if I look through the lens of 2024 Radzi versus 2011, very, very different answers. So then I didn't want to be a nuisance to her. And I was just so grateful and also worried that I would no longer be on her books. It was almost a stay quiet. I think I probably called her once a month, perhaps, to maybe ask about things. But looking back now, what it is pragmatically, well, if she has a target income which she needs to hit for her boss, and I'm providing 0% of that income, it's kind of a waste of her time to put any resource into me, unless she thinks that in the short to medium term, I will significantly add to her reaching her own KPIs. So understanding the business now, and then it was just purely emotional. Now it's a kind of understanding that this is a business.
Totally, totally agree on your analysis of kind of the economics of it. But if you didn't feel that you could either immediately monetize someone or you weren't going to invest in order to monetize them, why put them on your books?
I guess if you're an angel investor, sometimes you're willing to take a punt on something or someone. So I'm aware that it could be a case of, let's roll the dice, why not? He, if you like, has the ingredients to potentially be successful. And if it works out, that'll look great for me because I can say I found him. I guess egoically, you want to say she saw something in me and she knew it was going to happen. And maybe, and I've actually never thought about this, maybe I expressed values and virtues that maybe made her think this guy's willing to work for it. So maybe it wasn't just she's seen my showreel. Maybe it was I wasn't coming for a handout. I was coming for assistance, for a leg up, for help, for information. But I'm willing, whatever you give me, I'm gonna take the ball and I'm gonna do all the running here. All you gotta do, show me which ball, show me which direction, and I'm gone. So the really short answer is I don't know why she took me on. But probably for the first time ever, having actually thought this through, I think she's actually been a key part of my success, not so much for what I physically got out of it, but internally.
Did you feel at the time like you had options? Like you had the ability to sit down and go, okay, this is a partnership. I am choosing you as well as you choosing me, as happens in partnerships in our lives. Or did you feel that you just had to go, oh my goodness, there's a chink of light here. I'm gonna latch onto it and chase it.
Now, partnership, then anything, anyone. They're so quite not options. I can't believe this person is giving me a grain of rice. Not only is this not even close enough to sustain me in any nutritional way, I can't believe I've got this rice in my hands and I'm holding on to it like it's a Fabergé egg. This was amazing, but there was nowhere else. I sent for 2 years, I sent over 30 emails a day. And I'm gonna chuck out there that I received, I mean, this is so sad. I think I probably received less than one email reply a fortnight. And I just sent more and I put reminders. This person hasn't replied, so we're gonna follow up and say, I know you're extremely busy, we'll do that after 2 weeks, but I'll send it on a Tuesday, not on Monday, because people are busy on a Monday, and I'll do it just after lunch, because I might be in a better mood when they come. It was all thought through and everything, but looking back, honestly, that guy, if I had a scintilla of the work ethic I had then, and that I continue to have now, in school, I'd have gone to Oxbridge. I didn't go to Oxbridge because I didn't give a monkey's in school. Whatever fuel I saved in school has been expended and then some after university.
And what about now? You talk about yourself as two different Radzies. You're talking about a then and a now in quite stark terms. Yeah. So what is the difference between you now? What is the relationship you have? Do you have an agent? Are you still investing the same amount of time and energy yourself?
When I look at that guy then, the reason I look at him as a then is it was all future tense. It was all hope. It was optimism. It was this trying to almost cajole your own doubt that it is possible. Whereas now, then I had 1,000 keys for 1,000 doors. And I knew that one of these keys did open one of these doors. Now I'm behind the door. That's why I almost shut it and go, lean back on it and think, it happened. The only thing that I guess I hadn't prepared myself for, and I'm glad I didn't, is that that work ethic would have to continue. In my head, it was, you get into the palace and then you're sweet as a nut. Actually, for the same reason that I've tried my best to get behind the door, I'm now trying my best to learn and explore.
Now, what is your relationship with any kind of agent representation? What support do you get? Are you having to self-start as much?
Now it's a partnership with my agent. And now it's about, I guess, saying no to stuff. And it's about strategy. It's about a relationship. It's about being honest at times. But I would say where I differ to, I know all of my agent's clients, and this is a fact, he wouldn't even mind me saying this, is that most of my work, broadcast work, comes through relationships that I've forged. And I don't actually like having somebody come with me to a meeting, because I'm a fully grown man. Every other element of my life, I walk into a room on my own. I've done everything on my own. I don't need another human being to say, hi, this is Radzi. I think that, to me, that's weird. That would be like going on a date with my mum. It's, what is going on here? So, and I want to look at that person in that person's eyes and have a real conversation. And I think when you have a third party, it becomes very performative. And this person is sort of like a Don King promoter of, yeah, that sounds really good for Radzi, he'd be really good at that. And it's, well, to me, the role I see my agent having is, if he's gonna have a meeting, he can have a meeting separate to me. But if I'm gonna have a meeting, I wanna meet you as a person. And I also want to use a bit of EQ and IQ to say, oh right, this person looks tired, I wonder why that is. Oh, maybe they have children, perhaps their children aren't sleeping at night, perhaps they're whatever, but maybe we're now gonna forge something beyond just a kind of very mechanical, we have met, we have decided that yes, I can do job, you have decided there may be potential job, but you're gonna be coy about it, I'm gonna be coy about it, and then we'll leave having more questions than answers. So I guess I'm, probably as you've gleaned from that, quite an awkward person to have as a client, but I work my nuts off. And when I had my meeting with my current agent, the meeting I had with the company, the reason I went for them was super simple. Her name is Katie, basically heads up MC Saatchi. She said to me, what do you want to do? Department-wise, group-wise, element-wise, I said, there were four things at the time. Radio, documentaries, entertainment, sport. And she's right, there are four, now give me two. And I thought, what? So she told me, basically, to rein yourself in. And so she said, okay, let me put it down to you really simply. Each agent has five clients. That means one client per day of the week, if you like. Let's call that day 8 hours. And because I'm process driven and I like numbers, it worked for me. 8 hours. That means per week, we're gonna give 2 hours to each of those things. It's very difficult to work out after a month, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, why that hasn't or has worked out. If we choose two, or dare I say one, well, that's 8 solid hours. And if it isn't working, we can work on the strategy. I thought, I like this. This isn't just emotional fluff. Next element was, she said, what do you want from us? And I said, honest answer, it's as simple as this. I said, I will work my nuts off. All I need from you is to know that you're willing to work as hard for me as I am going to work. I said, I know you've got other people as well, but just knowing that if I say, can we contact this person, that they contact that person, that we don't need to sort of inflate my ego. I'm totally fine with who I am. If it's a no, it's a no. If it's beyond me profile-wise, whatever, that's fine. Just say that's the case. But, so it was a relationship, I guess, steeped from honesty, process, and actually setting boundaries and expectations. And that was just tick, tick, tick. Didn't see anyone else, just went, done.
Which kind of comes back to the point that it should, in theory, work between agent and talent like any other relationship, right? Any other relationship is based on what you just said. You set your boundaries, there's honesty. You've also described trust, respect. It's a partnership. What I'm interested in is, right now, you're in a position where you're probably quite sought after. You probably could go to a number of different agencies and they would be interested in having that meeting, that conversation. Some people might even try and shoehorn a connection just to get you on the books. Do you feel, and let's take this away from your current agent, let's say she's taken early retirement, she's not available. Do you feel that if suddenly your career lost momentum and you were going to have to reinvent, rethink, that you would have the similar amount of interest and people would be around there to have your back, or you would be on your own again until you've got yourself through the door?
So I think I'll speak actually frankly about my agent. So I think there are two elements to our relationship. There's the personal relationship and there's the business relationship. He cannot continue to work with me if I'm not doing my job as a presenter, as a client. That would be a bad agent, actually. So I may have to go. And that to me just is what it is. Because I haven't come in this game expecting to win friends. That's not what this is about. I'm looking to pay my mortgage. I'm looking to hopefully be competent at what I do, learn increasingly about what I do. But I'm also acutely aware that most presenters are awful. Most people who work behind the camera aren't particularly good at what they do. So, but I'd also say that's life. Are politicians woeful? So the actual gatekeepers in society, in life, competency is not a prerequisite to success. So I guess looking at it, maybe it's a slightly pessimistic view of the world, but just understanding the nature of the business, that I'm as loyal as they come, but I'm loyal to people. My best mates, I die for them, simple as that. My mum, I won't die for my mum because she wouldn't want me to, but I'll do anything for my family, anything at all. And work is work. Are these people going to be at my funeral in hopefully many, many decades to come? Don't know. What I do know is a significant part of my current success has come down to my agent, and I'll be eternally grateful to that. Even hearing you talk about, her name was Lizzie, my first agent, I smile when I think of her. I haven't seen her for a long, long time. Forever, I'll say, that lady was really important. And I'd like, if I ever wrote an autobiography in many, many, many years to come, to say, thank you, Lizzie. Because I always think it's important to thank people for what they've done, no matter how small. Because even if that contribution was simply an emotion, that was an important emotion, and especially to me then. And so if I had to be reinvented, the totally honest answer to that question really is, I'd leave the game. I can't be asked. I'm too tired. I do not have the energy to reinvent. I can't go again. I cannot go again. I can carry on, I can't go again. And after this game, God willing, I'll work in politics anyway. So I'll have to go again in some sense. But hopefully I'll take that platform and transition it across. But I can't go again. If I have kids, then I'll go again. But given how hard it was originally, I don't know if I've got that. What I would be willing to do is roll a ridiculous dice. So now we think of social media. It's incredibly, how do I describe social media? Social media is a circus. It's a Victorian circus of the extreme. So if you're the biggest man, the most beautiful, the most ridiculous person, willing to do anything, you will get physical eyeballs. TV confuses eyeballs with an ability to perform in TV and actually investment from an audience. They say influencers. What are they influencing? Nothing. But you're talking about people who went to university in the late 80s, early 90s, who are making an interpretation and perception of something they don't understand. And because they want to say to their bosses, they have their own KPIs, we've got this person, they're really exciting. That's better than having somebody who's solid. But point being, if I had to reinvent myself, I'll just roll a huge dice of risk. And if it pays off, it'll pay off big. And if it doesn't, well, I've lost anyway. But I can't go again.
It's really interesting. You have such an acute understanding and also seemingly desire to understand the mechanism behind what you're doing. So whether you're talking about your key performance indicators or whether you're talking about the economics of it or how it works, you seem really engaged with it. Whereas in my experience, there are a lot of people, smart people, but who go, well, actually, that's a distraction to me. I'm here to know the sport, to be on the camera, to do a fantastic job. I don't want to know about that. Tuning into your understanding of that, what would you change about the industry if you could roll your dice and you could change something about the industry wholesale like that, what would it be?
It's quite tough because by its nature, it's subjective. And by its nature, I'm sat here because it's subjective. So therefore, for me to add logos logic to it is tough because its very inception undermines what I would like from it. But I guess if I were to change it overnight, it would be for there to be honesty. So when a show tanks, or when we look at viewing figures and it hasn't worked, just admit it hasn't worked. If this were sales of a t-shirt, I don't care what kind of person bought the t-shirt. Or in fact, we sold so many, but it was spread over a nice period of time. It just goes to show for its durability in the end. Stop, guys. This is not emperor's clothes here. I'm not a moron. But yet, I sometimes have to not, I have to humor their own bloody ignorance and swallow the nonsense they're apparently feeding me. When I'm looking into their eyeballs thinking, so you actually think I'm that stupid that I would just, okay, yes, that sounds plausible, that the reason this show is tanked, that you haven't told us about the viewing figures, by the way, that we know about the viewing figures because I get access to the viewing figures, that it's in fact a real success. That's the side of it that's painful because you think, guys, let's be better than this. And I suppose it'd be honesty, but it'd be ambition. Let's be better. Let's actually have some aspiration here. Let's step up. If we're talking about sport and we're celebrating success and excellence, let's be excellent ourselves. Let's not make do. Let's not just turn up and trot out the usual guff. Let's not have people involved in this who don't know what they're doing. Let's not just all accept that the geezer who, or woman who's in charge, that they're right because they're in charge. Let's have some testicular fortitude here. Let's have some openness, some integrity. Let's have some forensic analysis to say, this is why it did not work. This has been a failure. It's okay to fail. Let's learn from it and let's not fail tomorrow. That doesn't happen virtually ever.
Is that why you want to get into politics?
No, politics is just about moving the needle and changing things and helping people, helping the voiceless. So I'm from a single parent family in Wolverhampton. We were skint. So I've been very fortunate about the education that I've been given, about the unconditional love that my mum's given me. And I think, I know I've got the balls to speak truth to power. And I'm willing to find out what happens when I do speak truth to power. And I'm also a socialist, and they're a rare breed. But usually socialists, I would say, I suppose I'm 6 feet under, I need to know what happened in the whole political game. And what I currently do is I hold a microphone for a living, it doesn't change anything. I can make a few people laugh, tell a few jokey, say some nice things, shine a light on sports that I love. But the bottom line is, my mum's worked in mental health all of her life, NHS all of her life, she's actually properly helped people. And I want to help people in my own way, which is give them the platform that they deserve. And also when I see nonsense happening in society, globally, whatever it might be, I think it's important that I'm able to influence that, an actual influencer.
Presenting with purpose, it would be nice to see as much of that as possible in the industry. Thank you so much for joining us. Please listen to other episodes of Anatomy of an Agency and let us know what you think about our podcasts at Good Vibes Only Talent on social media. Other than that, it's goodbye from me for now.